You're listening to Choose FI Radio. The blueprint for financial independence lives here. If you're looking to unlock the secrets to financial independence and early retirement, you're in the right place. Stay tuned and join a community of like-minded people who are getting off the hamster wheel and taking control of their lives in the pursuit of financial independence. Choose FI, your home for financial independence online.
Hello and welcome to the Choose FI Radio podcast. Today on the show, we are going to be talking with Larry Hagner from the Good Dad Project. Brad has been in his community basically since inception. Larry's community and podcast and website all talk about fatherhood. It talks about learning to be a better husband, learning to be a better father, learning to be present. These are concepts that appeal to us personally. They appeal to a huge segment of our audience. And we wanted to go a little bit deeper, so we asked Larry to join us on the show. Today is going to be a lot of fun. To help me with this, I have my co-host Brad here with me today. How you doing, buddy?
Hey, Jonathan, I'm doing well. Yeah, like you said, I have been a member of Larry's community since literally episode one of his podcast. I've been listening to him for years. And yeah, I had the good fortune of going on his show a couple of months ago. And amazingly, it changed his life. I mean, that's hard for me to even comprehend. He really took in the concepts of FI. And he got back to me a couple of weeks back and said, hey, I'd love to come on your show and tell your audience the changes that I've made since you came on to my own show. So yeah, really, really neat. So that's going to be a fun interview for sure. And yeah, what's going on in your life?
I think the biggest thing is I wanted to talk a little bit about what we have actually done with regards to dipping our toes into a vegetarian vegan world. This is something that we talked about several episodes back on this vegan path to FI. I believe that was episode 90. And we interviewed James and Steven, and they were kind of walking us through these both anticipated and unanticipated benefits of pursuing this lifestyle. Now, I think we kind of framed it on our end that neither of us feel a compulsion to become a vegan. But I think having said that, we're always open-minded. I'm not dogmatic about any particular approach. I do want to slowly optimize every single aspect of my life. And the question that I posed to myself, both in the episode with them and also on the following Friday roundup, was, am I willing to try this? Am I willing to just kind of see, you know, you don't know what you don't know until you do. I talked to my wife about it and she was in. She said, yeah, why not? There's no harm. There's no possible way that this could be a bad thing. It might not work for you. You may not feel better about it afterwards, but 1 week of your life to try something that for these fellas, they said it had transformed everything about their life. I said, I'm in. And so I thought maybe we could spend at least a couple minutes just talking about that, man.
Yeah, that sounds good. And it's interesting because we've kind of dipped our toes in as well. Certainly, it sounds like not as far as you have, but
shocking.
Yeah, we. That is very shocking. I'm sure the audience is thoroughly flummoxed at that. But yeah, we've actually had basically one meal a week where we've had this delicious dinner of tofu. I found this recipe. I'm not sure precisely how she does it, but I think it's fried in some manner and with some buffalo sauce. And we actually had these like cauliflower kind of tots, let's say. We threw them in the oven and it was just a great meal. We had that two nights ago and yeah, really phenomenal. So that's at least becoming a staple of our kind of weekly meals, which is neat. So, but anyway, tell me about what's going on with you.
Well, yeah, I thought I would kind of lead with a couple of the recipes that we've landed on as well. We'd actually talked about this vegan pad thai. I've made that like four or five times since that episode was recorded. And it's amazing. Now, it's a little bit time intensive. And I think in my life, one of the things I like crave is just simplicity overall. So I got this recommendation from Jeff in our community, and he sent this my way. It's called sweet Korean lentils. And I kid you not, you can make it in the Instapot. Shocking that that appeals to me, right? And then on top of that, what really is amazing is the flavor profile of this sweet Korean lentils. It reminded me of, and I kid you not, it reminded me of Mongolian beef from P.F. Chang's, which in a vacuum is possibly my favorite flavor profile ever. But I could just eat this stuff by the gallon. I mean, it's just that unbelievably good. And it's so, so simple and cheap to make. I mean, it's just firing on all cylinders. And I think if you're going to pursue a challenge like this, it's important to think about eliminating resistance. So you have one or two recipes that you're very comfortable with and you find a couple that you like and you build it into your life. And so we tried that and then we enjoyed it so much that we found a couple other recipes as well. And then this is kind of where I ran into a few speed bumps because I wasn't always searching for the word vegan when I was looking for these recipes. I was looking for, well, how could I use this ingredient? Let me look for something that has collards in it. And then I would get halfway through the recipe and I would see that the recipe had like bacon in it or something, right? And I was like, oh, I can't do that. So there were a few times throughout the week that I would get started making a recipe and realize that depending on how strict you are with this, the parameters really, really change. But it became so easy just to adopt basically a meatless diet. And I didn't miss it. One weekend, I really didn't miss it. And then I was like, well, how compelled do I feel to pursue, you know, is this like an ovo-lacto vegetarian thing where I either cut out or don't cut out milk and dairy as well? Because at one point, my wife made this pizza. I was very excited about pizza. She made it with a cauliflower crust, but then there was cheese on top. And I was like, oh man, this doesn't quite fall into this vegan profile. All that being said, we went without meat for almost 2 weeks. I was just excited. Allison, who we interviewed back in, I believe it was like episode 86, she sent me a recipe for black bean enchiladas. And that, again, the amount of flavor that you can get in a vegan meal is mind-blowing. You have to look for it. So I think if you decide to try this, one, I think you'd be surprised at some things that would technically prevent your meal from being vegan. And it's just, if you're going all in on this, it's worth considering that. But then two, if you can just latch onto a couple, maybe two or three really, really solid recipes. And the key is to get past the orientation phase where it's 25 steps and all these ingredients that you're unfamiliar with and you've never cooked with before. And then just have made it once and then learn how to shortcut the process. So for me, my three are the sweet Korean lentils, the vegan pad thai, and then this black bean enchiladas, all of which I'll have links for in the show notes for today's episode. But man, if you can do this, what if you were to get to the end of a week or the end of 2 weeks and say, that really wasn't that hard. I'm not even really craving meat. And then you had the option. You said, do I want to go back to a carnivore diet? Or maybe I just give this a run and see what happens. Because if it was incredible to me, if you're eating all of this clean food, you can have so much volume and you're just not going to gain unhealthy weight.
Yeah. And for me, it was about, and it is about overcoming limiting beliefs. That's the biggest aspect by far. I think I've always had this bizarro, quasi-stereotypical, like, oh, I need meat at every single meal, or I need some type of protein. Which obviously protein you can still get, right? But in my mind, I conflated meat and protein. So to have a meal, like I said, the other night that we had, just tofu and cauliflower, and to be completely full, so satisfied, delicious flavors, that's a win for me. So for me, it's baby steps. We're not at the point where we're jumping into this with both feet. But again, overcoming limiting beliefs and just getting a little bit better, like, these are the things that I'm trying to do in my own life. So congrats, man. And it sounds like we're both making moves.
All right, man. Well, let's go ahead and take a few minutes and talk about White Coat Investor. This is an individual that has had a profound impact on the limiting belief that maybe I had that I just can't do this myself. The limiting belief that, oh, I need to go out and hire someone to do it all for me. I don't want to know anything about my finances. This is someone that early on convinced me that even the most quote unquote complicated information, if you are willing to put a relatively short amount of time into it, could be learned. And it's so beneficial for you. Even if at some point you decide to outsource it and have some sort of advisor kind of handling this for you, it's so beneficial to just be willing to put a small amount of time in and understand the basics of personal finance. He, in my mind, was a true pioneer in this DIY path to personal finance.
Yeah, and it was interesting how he came across it. He's describing a couple of these instances where this realtor who wasn't looking out for him, right? The realtor wanted to sell a house, so didn't talk him out of buying it. This prepayment penalty on a mortgage that he caught at the very last minute. But how many people would have missed that? And this whole life policy that was sold to him by a quote unquote friend, obviously he would have enjoyed having a term life insurance plan. Something he said was, they really do believe they are helping you. It's kind of like the old adage, never ask a barber if you need a haircut, right? Like something like that. These people, that's their jobs. And really on some level, there's some self-delusion that what they're doing is right in all instances. That's how they're making their living. That's how they're spending their days. So anyway, long story short, it's not to make fun of those professions clearly, but you have to look out for yourself. That's the point. And you have to educate yourself to some degree and understand what you're getting into, especially when you're making huge decisions like a mortgage or buying a house, right? I mean, these are enormous things. You can't rely on somebody else. You can outsource this. So I think that was a huge, huge thing that Jim mentioned.
Yeah. And to your point, it's a form of cognitive bias. If you are a rational human being, you are a quote unquote good human being, you need to believe that what you're doing is helping somebody. And so if the incentive alignment is not always there, if it's like a perverse incentive, you need to have convinced yourself that what you're doing is in that individual's best interest. Otherwise, it makes it harder for you to sell a product. If you know you're scamming someone, it takes a lot more. It takes a piece of your soul. If you were to think about it and be intellectually honest, you can kind of see how that could happen. And I think in my mind, Brad, that just confirms the point that you were just making. Ultimately, you need to educate yourself. No one cares about your finances, your personal finances, as much as you do personally.
Yeah, there's no question. And I think Jim bought this loaded mutual fund from some advisor and he realized, hey, it's time to wake up. And he literally went to a bookstore and bought mutual funds for dummies. That's amazing to think of where Jim, the white coat investor, is now. And not all that long ago, he bought mutual funds for dummies. But what he did was he stood up and said, I need to do something. I need to take action and figure this out. And he said, it's incredibly simple to move your account to Vanguard. You don't even have to tell your former advisor. This is a question a lot of people have for us. How do I unwind this? I have some relationship. Isn't this going to be awkward? And that little bit keeps them from making the move they know they need to make. So you can do this in the background, which is kind of a neat little actionable tip. And another one that I was impressed by was that investing policy statement, which, as he said, it's just a written plan of what you are going to do, right? I mean, how simple is that when you break it down like that? But you set your goals, they have an asset allocation, and then they select investments. This statement is something they can go back to and look and say, when things get rough psychologically, which invariably they do for most of us when it comes to money, you look at this statement that you set in very rational times, right? You don't let your fear and your anxiety overwhelm you. You just look back at the statement and you say, okay, this is what I said. And I did that for good reason, right? And the last line of his, which I just thought was brilliant, was they have a 3-month waiting period before they can make any changes. Because, man, that fear and that anxiety can sweep over you in a minute sometimes. And you have no way almost to see through it. Maybe unless you have something like this written in front of you that you can say, no, these are my convictions. This is what I believe, and I'm going to stick with it. And come hell or high water, in this case, 3 months, right? Jonathan, that reminds me of, in a kind of weird way, Liz's, the 72-hour rule, right?
That's exactly what I was thinking. I was like waiting for a period so I could go back to it. But that's it, right? When in the context of frugality, we talk about Liz's 72-hour rule. This is on the other side of that. This is, again, creating some space between stimulus and response. Stimulus, I'm afraid the sky is falling. Response, let me sell everything I own. That's probably not in your best interest. What if we just created a little pause there? I love that. In this case, it's 3 months. 3 months is so much time to get your fear under control. And what if you already had it locked down? Well, we can only do what the policy statement tells us that we can do. Those are our list of options. I wonder how many people's entire investing fortunes would have been salvaged by something as logical and rational as that. And the other thing that I wanted to talk about just for a second is that while obviously the white coat investor has lots of letters after his name, he did not get his degree in finance. And I think this is very interesting because some of the most respected people in our community, for whatever reason, they're not actually CFPs. They don't have tons of credentials after the name. This is not a jab on CFPs by any stretch of the imagination. But what I think it highlights is that the most valuable education that you get is, in many cases, not due to a school bestowing upon you letters after your name. It's because you put time in and then you took action with that information. You applied it directly to your life. In the case of White Coat Investor, that's what we've seen. He went, he learned the information that he needed. He applied it directly to his life. And then in a relatively short period of time, he had proof of concept. And he said, hey guys, here's what I did. And we see that replicated over and over again in our community. And I think he even highlighted this as well. If you see what one person does, sure, it's an outlier. But when you have a crowdsourced financial independence community, when you have crowdsourced personal finance, what you see over and over again is that best practices rise to the top. That's what I loved about his story, because in many cases, he was a vanguard, a pioneer for this.
Yeah, I agree with you. And it is amazing to see these people who just care so deeply. And we get these incredible emails and voicemails from community members who have figured things out that we never would have in a million years, right? Because it means something to them. And just talking about certainly people who have websites, you look at Brandon the Mad Scientist and Jim from J.L. Collins NH. These guys aren't CPAs or CFPs or PhDs in economics, but they've written articles and documents that stand the test of time. And hundreds of thousands, if not millions of people look to these articles as real sources of genuine information that have changed their lives. How amazing is that? What a world it is that people like us and people like them can create content that you don't need to have gone to college. You don't need to have gone to 10 years of graduate school. You just need to care, right? And it's that impact, right? Which is interesting. That brings us back to the white coat investor. It's about impact. And I think that's what Jim's life is all about, right? He got this multi-million dollar offer, we have to assume, to sell the white coat investor. What he said was seeing how much it was worth actually motivated him to do more, which I thought was fascinating. He's already doing so much and impacting so many lives. It was that impact that made him step back and say, wow, this thing is incredible and it's worth something. It got him talking to his wife about, like he said, what it came down to was, what am I going to do for the rest of my life? And he said, it's about helping these new doctors and helping them understand to live like a resident. And it's not just doctors. I mean, I know I got great benefit from his mega backdoor Roth article. And I'm sure many people who have never been to medical school, I mean, got huge benefit from so many articles he's written. It is astounding to me, Jonathan, how we just see this theme of impact through so many of our guests, so many of our community members. And yeah, I know you feel it too, personally.
Yeah, I think increasingly we've latched onto these ingredients that allow you to feel increasingly confident about designing your future: mastery, autonomy, purpose, identity, connection. Those have come from various guests that we've had on this show and will have on the show in coming months. But if you can hit all of that, the financially independent part becomes largely irrelevant. I mean, we're all striving for this. It doesn't negate the fact that you're working towards it, but hitting those along the way is what is at the core of designing your future. And I think that Jim feels that. He doesn't feel the need to step away because he's firing on all those cylinders. One of the things that I also noticed is just how passionate and how big of a role family is as a part of that identity and that connection. And Brad, several months ago, actually went on the Dad Edge podcast with Larry Hagner. And it was a great conversation. We'll link to that episode in the show notes for today's podcast. But what was so fascinating about that is Larry circled back to us about a month later and said, guys, I have gone deep into the fire rabbit hole since our talk, and I'd love to talk to you about it.
Yeah, this is a real treat for me. It's one of those kind of like almost like a fanboy type situations where I have been listening to Larry since his very first episode. And it's amazing now that I've gotten a chance to know him and been on his podcast. Now he's here on the Choose a Vi show, and it's just really cool, just for me personally. And yeah, to see that this message that I brought to his community impacted him so personally. And yeah, there's a lot of overlap between our two communities. I know Vincent Puglisi, our good friend, is kind of the connector here. But yeah, we met our buddy Nick down at FinCon, and he's a member of Larry's community. And I just see a lot of overlap between our Facebook groups. So yeah, I think this is a message that should resonate very strongly with our people. And Larry, with that, welcome to the podcast.
Oh my gosh. I'm honored to be here. Fanboy. I appreciate those kudos. And if you listened all the way back to the first episode, for the first 50, I'm sorry. I don't know about you guys, but man, like the first 50 episodes for me were, hey, you guys have done a way better job with your podcast than I did in the beginning. Because like, I just felt so awkward. I was like, I know what my message is, but I'm still learning it and I'm still trying to figure this out. And I think it took me a good year to finally figure out, okay, now I understand. I understand what resonates with me. I understand what resonates with my audience. And now I need to make a pivot and a shift and all that. And to be honest with you, I can't even listen to my first 50 episodes. Like anybody who tells me that when I get on a call, when guys want to join the Alliance, our mastermind community, they're like, dude, I've been listening to you since the beginning. I'm like, I'm so sorry to hear that. I always tell people to start at like episode 50 because that's when it didn't get awkward anymore. So, but I appreciate you saying that.
But let's actually talk about that. Why the podcast? What was the impetus to start this? Even when you were bad at it, even when you didn't know what you were doing, even when you were incredibly awkward, like what was the calling?
The calling was really just my own struggle. I mean, my God, I was really struggling with fatherhood. I was really struggling with being a husband. And it was just, you know, and I can go into my story if you want, but however, really what it boiled down to was, is I struggled because I, you know, I didn't have that growing up myself. I didn't have that blueprint of a father and ideal parenting and the lessons learned and all that good stuff. But the thing was, is I knew that the pattern, the bad pattern had to stop with me. And I struggled with everything that every guy that we help all the time, which is patience, temper, negative self-talk, feeling isolated, you know, and being isolated. I struggled with all those things. And finally, I was just like, I'm done living this way. I need to be better. So I sidestepped my ego. And I just said, you know what? I'm just going to learn. And the first action that I took was in 2012, when I started the Good Dad Project Facebook page. And it's still a page, it's still around. But I started blogging in 2013. And what I found out, even though I've written two books, I don't really enjoy writing, which is kind of odd, right? But I really love speaking and I love podcasting. So I was like, well, instead of a blog, I think what I want to do is I would love to start a podcast, because I would love the opportunity to talk to people way smarter than me. And then the podcast just become a public platform of me learning and then sharing what I'm learning. And that was the impetus for the podcast.
Yeah, Larry, that's amazing. I'm just going to learn. And that reminds me of a speech we saw Rachel Cruze give, where she said, be the guide, not the hero, right? Nobody wants this kind of like monolithic from on high, you have to do X, Y, and Z, and that's the only way. They want to connect with you as a person and see that you're not perfect, that you're going through this with your audience. And I'm curious, what are the biggest lessons you've learned from these hundreds of episodes you've put out? And like, how has your audience helped you personally?
Wow, that's such a good question. If I could boil it down to just some big lessons learned, it's number one, don't come home with a wallet full of money and a house full of strangers. I learned that from Aaron Walker from View from the Top. And so what does that really mean to us is men are wired to provide. We are wired to work. We are wired to go out and hunt and gather. So even when we're spending time with our family, sometimes we feel like in the back of our mind, that hamster wheel is running, it's turning. And we're like, you're not doing your job. You're not working. You're not bringing home bread and bacon and all this other stuff, right? So what men tend to do is mentally and emotionally, we're not present. We're not there. We're always thinking like, how can I go out and provide more? What can I do more? The thing that we miss out on is that intention and that purpose and that relationship with our kids. We can make all the money in the world, but all of it is for nothing if you don't have the relationships with the most important people in your life. So that's lesson number one. Lesson number two that I've learned is you have got to constantly date your wife. You've got to be pursuing her. You've got to treat her in a certain way. You can't get complacent. You have to love her the way she needs to be loved, not the way you want to love her. And just in a short version, you have to understand what the five love languages are, and you have to understand how she needs to be loved. And you also have to understand your love language so you can communicate to her your needs. I swear, if every married person had that book and they read it and they implemented it, I would almost bet that the divorce rate would probably go down 50%. So that's lesson number two. Lesson number three, one thing we say all the time is, and again, I learned this from Aaron Walker, is isolation is the enemy of excellence. And unfortunately, most men will live isolated. Most men, we're great at acquaintances, and we're great at having these surface level conversations with other men in our life. And we're always talking about the same stuff, which is, you know, for instance, like what I did on the weekend, or what I do for a living, or what sports my kids are in, or what Trump just tweeted out. However, men tend to operate in five dimensions, and one of those is health, and that encompasses emotional, mental, spiritual, physical, relationship with our wife, relationship with our kids, what we do for a living, and then what you guys do, which is super important and very intimate for men, which is financial. So men tend to live isolated, and when they're operating in those five dimensions and they don't have a group of men that they can have better conversations with in those five dimensions, they tend to live very isolated. And what happens is we don't show up to be our best selves, and we don't live out to be what our best potential is. Those are probably the three biggest lessons that I've learned. And if I could add one more, and it's the relationship with your kids. This is something that's so important to men, and especially this generation. A lot of us come from the generation where our dads worked and we didn't necessarily have the relationship. Well, now you're seeing a generation of men who are very hungry to have a better relationship with their kids. However, we're kind of scratching our heads and we're like, I don't really know what that looks like or what to do. So one of the things that we teach, like, so for instance, in our mastermind community is like, hey, you need to carve out time daily, weekly, yearly, and you need to share in epic experiences with your kids. Now, I'm not talking about like taking your kids to Disneyland, because that's like an epic experience. But what I am talking about is you can have an epic experience every single day by asking your kids better questions. The quality of our lives depend on the quality of our questions that we ask ourselves and of each other. So if you're asking your kids, the only thing you ask them all day long was, how is school? Good or fine? Because those are the two answers that men love the most, good and fine. But if you sit there and you have an intentional, purposeful conversation with your kids, you can have an epic experience even on a daily basis when you say, hey, what was the best part of your day today? What was so cool about your day today? What was the highlight? And then what was the toughest part about your day? And how did you get past it? I mean, think about that for a minute. It's helping your kids think a different way. You're having a more intentional conversation with them. And most importantly, you're learning information about your kids and how to connect with them that you otherwise wouldn't. So those are the biggest lessons that we've learned.
I hate to tell you this, Larry, but you have convinced me that I need to go back and listen to your first 50 episodes.
Don't do it. Don't do it.
Let me ask you this. You've been talking and working with this content for a while now. In kind of my own place, I'm dealing with a lot of the concepts in the financial space, but I'm curious on your end, is there something that of everything you told us, these biggest lessons, is there one that stands out as one that you still struggle with the most?
Absolutely. The thing that I struggle with the most is what I see even men in the Alliance struggle with when problems happen. So we call this the valleys. We call this, or even the pit. When problems happen, it's very easy when things are going good in your life to share what your wins are and share what's going on and share inspiration. However, when things really hit the fan, and that can be financially, that can be through your job, how you show up or what you do for a living. It can be the strained relationship with your wife. It can be a lost connection with your teenage daughter or son. It can be a health crisis. What men tend to do is they tend to shut down and they become almost shamed and they feel weak that if they reach out and say, guys, I'm really struggling with this and I need some insight. It's one of the hardest things for men to do. And even me, I mean, so I facilitate our community. Yet when things really hit the fan, I tend to view myself as like, I'm withdrawing and I'm doing exactly what I tell these men not to do. In the Alliance, we call this leaning in. So when a man makes a post or he's on one of our calls and he's like, hey guys, I need to lean in. Everyone perks up because we know what is about to be shared. This guy's probably been harboring it for a long time and it's really important to him. And he's about ready to get vulnerable and he wants some insight. I struggle with that as well because I'm like, I still have those old tapes. And by the way, if you're younger than 40, I'm sorry. I just aged myself. If you have those old MP3s, right? If you have the old MP3s that tell you, I shouldn't do that, right? I shouldn't do it. Men are really guilty of shooting all over ourselves, right? We should a lot, but I shouldn't do that. I'll be weak. That's not true. Two things happen when you actually reach out for help. Number one, you unpack what's going on in your life, so you'll be able to get insight. Number two, that's contagious. When you lean in and ask for help, guess what? There's another man in the shadows who's watching you. You just ask for help. Now he feels, you know what? That's inspiring. I'm going to ask for help. That's what I still struggle with, though. And I still try to talk myself out of it. That's my Achilles heel.
Does it make it more difficult because you are facilitating these groups to then open up your vulnerabilities yourself? Or do you see that trickle down effect?
So I struggle with it because then, you know, in my mind, I'm shooting again. I shouldn't do this because I'm facilitating. However, the thing that I have to remind myself of is that it is most important that I do it, and I do it often, and I do it first, because you've got to, if you want your community and if you want to inspire others, you've got to show your vulnerabilities first. It's so important.
Yeah, Larry, those lessons that you just passed on to our audience, they're just incredibly powerful. And I think it's really a lot of the items that we've been talking about here at Chooseify, just probably using different words, right? You're talking about isolation. You're talking about finding that community of people that can support you, that you can share your joys and your sorrows with, your problems. And obviously, family and connection. You're talking about all these things. So it's interesting to hear you use your words to describe this, you know, and you from your community. So I really appreciate that greatly. And just being a podcast listener of yours, I know you've talked repeatedly about the topics that really resonate with your community. And it's often relationships with your spouse or a significant other. I know you kind of say you have a lot of really interesting Navy SEALs who come on the podcast and your guys just eat that up, but it's also finances. I've heard you say that a number of times, and you try to bring people on who can pass on good information in your community. And I was so honored when you had me on the show. And yeah, it was even more amazing to have you reach out to me a couple months after the fact and say, I really have jumped into this concept of financial independence and it's been changing my life. Like, I mean, that I can't tell you what an honor that is. So thank you. And I just love to hear about it. Let's hear what's going on.
I was just BS and you guys want to get on a show.
Well played, sir. Well played.
Yeah. No, it was really, really inspiring. There's a couple things that I've made changes on. So can I share with you guys, like, how much of a disaster I was?
Yeah. Well, with a setup like that, how could I possibly say no?
Yeah. So, my wife and I, Jessica, got married in 2003, and that's when I was introduced to Dave Ramsey. And when we graduated from college and got married, so we were living the American dream, right? We bought our first home. It was a humble home. Nothing really too fancy. We bought a new car, which at the time was a 2003 Saturn View. Man, I thought we were pimps in that thing. You know what I'm talking about? Like, I mean, the Saturn View, like our first SUV, we thought it was so awesome. So we bought that brand new for $24,000. Both Jessica and I did not come from means growing up. So we both paid for school. Combined, we owed about $60,000 in student loans. So right off the bat, without including the house, 85 grand in debt. So I was introduced to Dave Ramsey, and I was in charge of the bills for our first 5 years. And I'm proud to say that I paid off $80,000 in 4 years. However, I did it very recklessly. So like, I was in charge of the bills, and then, you know, so I just threw everything. Like, if I had the kitchen sink in my hand, I would have sold it, you know, just to pay off like more student loans, just throwing everything and the kitchen sink at these bills. So when Jessica would be like, hey, it's Friday, I'm going to go to the grocery store, how much money we got? I was like, oh, we got like $24. What the heck am I going to buy with that? You know, or every year we wanted to go on a vacation to Florida, and it was a pretty inexpensive. However, like, hey, how much money do we have set aside for vacation? I'm like, really nothing. And so she'd be like, what the heck? But yet I was like, oh, but we're paying off all this debt. We're paying off all this debt, which was responsible. However, I missed a couple things. Number one, bringing my spouse into the mix on that and making all the decisions and being pretty reckless about it. I probably imposed a lot of undue stress on her that otherwise, even though I was doing something positive, I was doing it not as a team, more as an individual. The other thing that I noticed about me doing bills is it was emotionally taxing on me. And what I mean by that is I have an emotional relationship with money that no matter how much I have, I don't like it going out the door. It feels like I'm losing something. So that was hard to get over as well. So what we did was, is after me doing the bills for 5 years, and we did pay down debt, which, hey, high five, congratulations. But my wife ended up paying the bills. So I handled our investments. She handled cash flow. She's very good at that. She's real resilient at that. Like, it doesn't really get to her to see money go out. She's actually very good at managing it. She's good at saving it for a rainy day. She's good at paying down things. She's strategic. So it was a much better fit. However, this is probably going to make your hair on the back of your neck stand up when I tell you guys this. But I was like, okay, I'm not even going to go to our checking account and see what's in there. I'm just going to put all that on her. I don't even know the days that I get paid. Like, that's all her. And like, I would purposely not go to our checking account or anything, credit card statement. I had no idea what was going on. And I kind of enjoyed living in the dark. What I've learned over the years is like, that's just as reckless, you know, living in the dark and not being a team when we're together on this. So I think both approaches are rather reckless, right? So, now that I've been doing what I've been doing with the podcast, we've had different financial folks on. We've had Brad on. I think his message really spoke to me quite a bit, because there were some changes that I made both personally and professionally based on the interview that I had with him. Now, granted, we've had other financial gurus before, but I would say, like, you know, on the podcast, and all of them have contributed fantastic information. But if I look back on, like, what changes do I really need to make professionally and personally, it came after that podcast with Brad. So, like, for instance, I'll talk about professionally first. In our Data Edge Alliance, our mastermind community, what we did was that is we put more of a focus on helping men with finances. So we actually even formed a community call team just to help guys with their finances, which was a super cool thing to do. And men are really valuing that. So every other week we have a call team that we sharpen one skill set. So we either help men pay down debt. We talk about different investments. We talk about being frugal versus being cheap. Ways to shop insurance, all kinds of different things, but also do Q&A to help men really understand what's going on with them financially and how we can even have, and this is so important, better conversations with our significant others. Because I don't know about you guys have got a phenomenal, amazing podcast, a phenomenal, amazing brand community, but let me ask you guys this. Were you ever taught personal finance growing up?
No. Never.
No.
Never at all. I don't even know, frankly, where I picked up all my information. It was all self-taught. And I think really just luck more than anything. Maybe picking up a couple of books here and there. The Millionaire Next Door jumps out at me. I think there was one, I don't know that I've ever mentioned this before, but it's called How Smart Couples Get Rich by maybe David Bach. And I read that years ago, probably like right as I was meeting my wife. And I think maybe those two books were my first introduction.
And on my end, Dave Ramsey was a massive influence on my life. I think that a large part of it for me was actually the irritation that I didn't have a game plan. And clearly other families and other people did. And it was almost like an overcompensation for not growing up with that information. What does winning with finances actually look like that kind of drew me to this DIY approach to FI?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, it's almost like the most important and intimate things in our lives. Being a parent, you leave that hospital and they're like, hey, best of luck. Hope everything works out. And then being married. All right, great. You know, come back from the honeymoon, go figure it out. And the same thing with finances. I mean, there's no wonder that the US is in such financial distress because we have a generation and even the generation before us that really has no clue what the hell we're doing. So really understanding and how to work together as a team. So I'll share a couple of insights that I learned on the podcast as well as from our other podcast guests, but conversations with Brad is that number one, you have to work together with your wife as a team. So after that podcast, I was like, I need to get my hands dirty again and have a weekly cash flow meeting with my wife. Really understand what's going out so we can both make decisions on this. Like that's huge. The other thing that we invested in was YNAB, the YNAB software. So you need a budget. I've had Jesse Meekham, the CEO, on my podcast. I love his software because it's a way to be proactive, like the way he described it. Was you can be like the movie Minority Report, go out and prevent things and plan for things versus like CSI, where you're looking at your finances like it's a dead body. Like what the hell just happened this past week? Like what did we spend? Right. And that's not a fruitful conversation you want to have with your spouse. You want to think about like, okay, it's the month of October. We know we're going to have these expenses coming up. Let's categorize, let's plan accordingly. If we need to move money around, we can. So that's one thing is making sure that Jessica and I were on the same page. The other thing too is that I started putting money on a monthly basis into an investment to pay off our mortgage in the next 7 years. So I did that because after I did that podcast with him, I was like, I really want to do this. I want to be completely financially free in 7 years. How do I do that? I worked with a guy that I do some investing with, and I automatically have a certain amount taken out of my account and put into a fund so that at the end of 7 years, if we want to write a check for our house, we can. So that was another thing that we did. Another thing that we did was we are investing in assets. So right now I have a contract on a rental home that I'm going to purchase that will open up a stream of cash flow that we can then put into either paying our house down, paying for the kids' college or whatever that is. But I really got in that mindset of like, look, if we need something, if we want something, and if we have cash that's sitting in the bank, you've got to put that to work. Because if you have cash that's sitting in a checking account that's earning 0.25%, not even 1%, but 0.25%, that's going to cost you money. if you're not investing it into a vehicle that's going to bring you more revenue or make you more money. So that was another thing that I learned. So I would say those are three things that we have implemented that we've gotten really serious about. And man, we're excited. We're excited about it.
Wow, Larry, that's amazing. And yeah, one item you talked about in there, I want to really ask you a question, but point out to the audience is, so you're not paying additional principal on your mortgage with every monthly mortgage payment. You're saving this additional money into, let's say, a mutual fund. And at the end of 7 years, you'll have the option to pay off that mortgage if you want, but you're actually benefiting from, I guess, mentally appropriating this money in essence and saying, this is for the mortgage pay down if I choose, but also then getting the potential significant benefits of investing that money in the stock market or wherever it is precisely and getting those returns over the next 7 years. Am I hearing you right?
You are. And in fact, so let me clarify. And you know what? This is a great opportunity. I'd love to bounce this off you guys and just say, hey, you know, kind of pulse check this and be like, hey, what do you guys think of this strategy? So my wife and I, we sat down, we're like, okay, if we want to pay our house off in 7 years, do we put extra money towards the principal or how do we do this? And most importantly, how do we become disciplined about it? Again, you know, quality of your life depends on the quality of your questions. So when you're asking yourself and your spouse, how and what do we need to do here? Two things came about. Number one, we wanted options in case, God forbid, anything happened, you know, if there's a health crisis or anything happens, we want to have access to that money if, God forbid, we absolutely need it. So one thing that we did not want to do was, okay, we're not going to pay extra into a mortgage where once we pay that, then it's in there. And we no longer have access to pull it out unless we take out a home equity line of credit. And who knows what something is going to look like, and we don't want to borrow against it. We want that to be like our money. So what we did was we decided instead of putting extra towards principal, we're going to put this in a separate account. And that way, like I said, God forbid anything happens, like, you know, hey, a turn of the tide comes, knock on wood, we need it, we've got it, it's there. The second thing is discipline. We knew we are not disciplined enough to make that transfer every single month. I think if I'm being honest with myself, we would find a reason not to transfer that money over. Oh, we need it for this. Oh, we need it for that. And you really don't. It has to be automated. Like it has to be automated. I can't remember what the statistics are, and you guys would know better than me, but I think it's above 80%. If you don't automate it, you have an 80% chance of that transfer, that savings, that payment, whatever it is, to not happen. So we knew like, okay, if we're going to be disciplined about this, we've got to take it off of the onus off us and put it into a system where it's going to take it out no matter what. So those are the two things that we did.
Yeah, it's amazing how paying yourself first and putting it on that autopilot, it just matters. I mean, the psychology of money is often much more difficult than the actual nuts and bolts, probably always, I would say, but we'll go with often here. It's hard to get your brain straight, right? And you have to know yourself first and foremost. I think that is the key. There's perfect financial advice, let's say, quote unquote here, kind of tongue in cheek. But there's also good advice for you and your family. And that's what's so important. Like there would be people who would even have an issue with paying down the mortgage. Jonathan and I struggle with this personally all the time. And I know many members of our community do. The perfect math says you shouldn't pay down your mortgage, right? Like you should invest in the stock market over the next 50 years and it'll be worth more to you at the end of that time period. But that said, psychologically, for so many of us, having that house paid off provides this sense of security that is worth more than almost any amount of money. So I think it seems like clearly you've come down on that side. I think having those options, this is actually kind of a best of all worlds scenario where you're paying yourself first, you're clearly earmarking it for that, you're potentially getting the upside market returns, but you're also saying, all right, if some kind of crisis situation happens, I have more access to this money now than I would have if it's just sitting in essence by paying down the mortgage. So I love that thought process. And yeah, Jonathan, I'd love to hear your thoughts as well.
Increasingly, I'm a huge fan of kind of what you've described, Larry, this idea of giving yourself a longer term with a very reasonable, hopefully low fixed interest rate, and then still paying yourself first to pay down the mortgage, but putting it in an investment account. And then one thing I'm kind of you know, merging some ideas here, and this is a little bit outside the scope, but when it comes to this idea of sequence of return risk, which is something that we've talked about in several episodes that we've done with Big Earn, if you ever go to the point where you are leaving your job, so accumulation is easy, right? This idea of building this money pot, this perpetual money making machine. But if any point you get to the point where you're gonna be drawing down on those assets, maybe in your 40s, 50s, 60s, and you're in the decumulation phase, go back to that investment vehicle and strongly, strongly consider just paying off your mortgage in a lump sum, because that will then hedge against that sequence of return risk. We were on a panel recently at FinCon and we were talking through some of these ideas. And to me, that seems like the best of both worlds. You're paying yourself first, you're automating it, like Larry said, you're hopefully benefiting from the arbitrage between the two various rates that you're getting between the mortgage and the market. But as you move to decumulation, which we know is significantly more complicated than accumulation, just hedge that risk by paying off that mortgage.
Yeah, for sure.
And yeah, Larry, I love that you and your wife now are on the same page. And to me, that's the biggest thing here. And it's neat to hear that you have this plan for the mortgage. It sounds like you're buying a rental property. I don't know if you had that in the works before we chatted, but if not, that's crazy. But any other changes? Like, have you guys looked at the expense side, or are you focusing mostly on the income side of this?
Now, so are you talking about the rental property in particular? Are you talking about more the monthly budget?
Yeah, I would say the expense side, definitely the monthly budget. Have you guys jumped into that at all?
Oh, yes. Yes, yes, yes. One thing I've noticed, our biggest expense, so we have, for those in the audience who don't know me or my story, I have four boys, which is insane. I have more stories. I mean, I say things out loud to these four children that I would say to like a belligerent drunk person, I think, like my 4-year-old came running out of the bathroom without pants on because he's now potty trained and all that good stuff. And he comes out of it, he runs out, and his favorite treat is spray whipped cream. So like, you know, in order to potty train him, I'm going off on a tangent, but this is the funny story. And, so he runs out of the bathroom, no pants on. My 10-year-old grabs the whipped cream because he thinks it's hilarious. He pulls his brother's head back, sprays whipped cream in his mouth. You know, he's laughing. And I'm like, Mason, I was like, stop spraying so much whipped cream in your brother's face. And Lawson, please put some pants on. And I'm like, did I really just say that to
just
another
a
human
day
being?
In a life.
Yeah, it's a day in a life with four crazy boys. So anyway, to feed these people, our grocery bill is insane. It's insane. So my wife and I really looked at, okay, what are we spending at like Walmart, Target, grocery stores, and all that good stuff? Like, what does it take to actually feed these four hungry children that, by the way, there's always one in our pantry at all times? What does it cost for that? That was actually our biggest expense, was groceries and just, you know, diapers and wipes and all these other things. So my wife and I made a decision. We're like, okay, in order to cut these expenses back by probably 30%, what if we shopped at Aldi's for these types of foods, go to the grocery store for these types of foods? And then the other thing that we've done too is now we use cash. Swiping a card for groceries, there's not much accountability there. And you never know, unless you're looking at like the software we use, YNAB, and you can look at your app and all that other good stuff. But just being like, okay, like, look, we're going to give ourselves a ceiling here, and it's going to be this much per month, and you're going to take it out in cash. When the cash is gone for the week, we just can't go to the grocery store until the next week, and we'll find something. If you rummage through your freezer and stuff, you'll find something to eat. You know, you really will. And it helps you also make better buying decisions. You'll spend, I think it's 10 to 20% less at the grocery store or at the stores if you don't swipe a card, if you're paying with cash. But as for other expenses, one of the things that we implemented after that podcast where Brad was on is we started looking at what's our committed expenses. So what are our expenses? They don't really change, and we have to pay them no matter what every single month. So getting very, very concrete with like, what's our house payment? What's our electric bill? What's the gas bill? What's the water bill? Trash? What does it cost for me to actually run this house that's non-negotiable? Then getting very real with what is your non-committed costs? So like grocery stores, you know, maybe kids' sports, trying to think of other things. Gas in your car is a pretty committed expense. Just things like that, that you, it's more flexible. It's not set in stone, and you have more say in where that money goes, right? The third and final thing, there's always something that will come up, and you always think like, oh, that came up this month, it won't come up next month. But if you really look at your calendar, like, does anybody really not know that Christmas is once a year? But yet in October, November, like suddenly we're like, oh, we got to save for Christmas. Well, what if you were proactive and you saved a little bit every single month, you know? Or for instance, do you not know that anybody in your family is going to have birthdays, and not just your immediate family, but your mom, your dad, your brothers, your sisters, all these other people that you usually get gifts for. So like literally my wife and I have a category for gifts, birthday gifts, because every month, my God, like her family's huge. There's always a birthday, and it's not, and that's not to say we go nuts on birthday gifts, but if you spend $30 to $50, you know, on a gift, then you got to budget that in, and it shouldn't be a surprise because you know when people's birthdays are, right? Car insurance. A lot of people pay that 6 months out, and then they're suddenly surprised, like, oh crap, like I owe car insurance now for the next 6 months. Like you've got to budget that in as a monthly expense, even if you pay that 6 months in advance. Vacations. If you're going to go on vacation, which a lot of people do, and a lot of people put their entire vacation on a card and put themselves into a crisis. But if you know, like, hey, every June we go on a family vacation, it shouldn't be a surprise. Like, oh yeah, yeah, we have that vacation coming up. You've got to put money aside every month for that. And it's not, it shouldn't be like, oh, hey, we're going on a vacation in June. It's April. We better scrounge some money together. You know what? Just put it on a card. You can actually be way more proactive and plan for things like that.
One of the things that strikes me is that you get a level of peace when you know what's going to be leaving your bank account each month. I mean, I think so many of us just kind of drift from one month to the next. And, oh, it's all going to work out. And I'm curious if you went from drifting to say, wow, let me take ownership of this. What effects have that had on your day-to-day life?
It has given us a more realistic budget, and it's allowed us to have better conversations. With four kids and being a parent, I think all of these, any parent that's listening to your podcast, which I'm sure a lot of your audience is, nobody likes surprises. And in fact, we usually don't, the problems are the surprises we don't like, we call those problems. So I think the more proactive you can be in your planning and think of absolutely everything that you're going to have to financially pay for. I mean, another example of that, like, so for instance, it's October and costumes are ridiculous. For your kids to dress up, if you're going to go to like these Halloween stores, you're going to pay $50 for a costume. If you've got a couple of kids, that's $100. You know, if you have three kids, that could be $150. You know, that's an expense that maybe you're not planning on. But you've got to be proactive and really look at your month and be like, hey, what's in store for us this month? What do we need to look out for? What do we need to plan for? And a lot of people just like, oh yeah, we need to do that. Or, oh, we need to spend that. And then you've spent it. And then you're like, okay, now how do we pay for that? So it's really taken a lot of stress off of, again, if you're more in crisis mode or what we call CSI mode, where you're examining the dead body and seeing what happened to your money afterwards and like, oh, that hopefully won't happen next week. Versus being like proactive in Minority Report, where you can go plan for something, prevent something, and make a better decision.
Larry, I love how your first step on the path to FI was getting your expenses on paper, or in this case, on YNAB. I think that's such a smart strategy. And that's really what I counsel everybody is. So many of us go through life, like you said, we don't have financial training. Nobody ever taught us how to do this. We're just kind of closing our eyes and hoping that it's okay. I think that moment of awakening when you realize, all right, I can't keep putting this off. I need to just get it on paper, get it in front of me, even if the news is bad. You need to get it in front of you and understand what's going on. So yeah, I think that was a brilliant, brilliant strategy. And then you have to figure out what works for you. Many people in our audience are probably cringing when you're talking about the $150 on Halloween costumes, but if that's important for you and your family, and I'm not sure you were necessarily advocating that, but like, then find space in your budget for it. You have to realize that it's coming up, so you're not putting it on a credit card. I mean, that's just criminal to do that. So
right.
That's the crucial part. And I'm also struck in what you said a few minutes ago about how psychology, it comes into all of this. Personally, I've never been a budgeter. It just isn't my thing. It obviously is your thing. Using cash for you is helping you save money. And I try to use my credit card for 100% of items. But that's the coolest part about this is I'm not right and you're not wrong. It's nothing like that. It's find out what works for you as a person and use those strategies to succeed going forward. That's what I advise everyone listening to this.
Yeah, for sure, man. And if you want, I'll even expand on one other thing that we've implemented. Before I share this, have you guys done shows on allowance for kids?
We haven't gotten there yet.
Okay.
Mine's only 18 months. So he's, we're still looking for tools and techniques. Yeah. This will be perfect. I'll write it down.
Yeah. So if you want, we just implemented a strategy here, and I learned it from one of our podcast guests, but teaching kids, you know, financial literacy, you know, so teaching them about money. And I'll share some things that we're experimenting with. Some of them may sound a bit crazy, but if you want, we can go there.
Yeah, let's do it.
Okay. So I just had a guy by the name of John Lanza on the show, and John Lanza is a guy who's been teaching what's called the art of allowance. So I had him on my podcast, and there were some things that he said, and I was just like, dude, like I would not do that. Like that just sounds crazy. But then he had an explanation of why he did it. My 10-year-old, my 12-year-old now get in an allowance, and they have for quite some time. However, I always tied their allowance to chores. I no longer do that. There's reasons that I learned from that podcast of why I don't do that. However, my kids are now much more responsible for things that we would pay for otherwise. So like, for instance, we give them a higher allowance now, much higher than it was. However, they are now responsible for their haircuts. They are responsible for the decisions to purchase what clothes they want. They are responsible for putting money into savings. They're also responsible for putting money into what we call the share jar charity. 10% of their allowance goes into some sort of charity, but it's putting them in the driver's seat to make better decisions. So like I'll give you an example. Last night, you know, we bought Halloween costumes, and I told my kids, you know, I gave them their allowance at the beginning of the month. I was like, I sat down with them and I was like, okay, this is what money you have for the month. Let's think about what expenses are coming up for you. If you want to spend, and I'm going to share with you guys, it'll probably make your eyebrows go up, but I give my 10-year-old and 12-year-old $100 a month. The reason I do that is because there are certain things that I'm paying for them already that they're not responsible. They're not in the driver's seat. So like, for instance, I pay for their haircuts. That's $17 per each per month. They are not responsible for that. You know, if they want a new pair of shoes, and we don't go crazy on shoes, but say it's $25 for a pair of shoes. Well, now they're responsible for that expense. If they want to buy their lunch at school, I no longer pay for that. That comes out of their pocket. If they want to buy something, a snack, because the kids always want snacks, right, at the gas station or the store, they're in charge of that. If we go to the movies, I will pay for their ticket. But if they want that crazy expensive popcorn or overpriced candy, they're responsible for that. And we talk about that. We talk about different ways. What I've noticed is since I've done this, is it's made my kids way more financially literate, and they make very different decisions based on what they have. So like, I'll give you an example. Yesterday we were at the Halloween store. My son was dying to get this scary clown costume. It was $60. And we sat down at the beginning of the month. I was like, okay, you've got $100. $17 is going to, you're going to want a haircut. $17 just comes right off the top. So now you have 83. You're going to pay for your Halloween costume. Call it $50 right off the bat. Now you're up to, you have already spent before the month has even started, $67. Not to mention the fact we save 20% every month. That's what we do. We pay ourselves first. So right there, that $20 comes off. So then he's starting to compute. Okay. Like, where can I cut corners? Where can I save money? So one thing that he did was, hey, does Sports Clips have a coupon this month? And we looked it up, and sure enough, it did. So last night we went to go buy him a costume. He's been dying to get this one costume. We showed up, it's $60, and he just looked at it. Now, normally what he would do is be like, that's the one I want. Can you buy it? And I would have probably bought it. So now he's just like, I don't know if I want that one. I was like, okay, well, let's look around. He ended up finding one for $39.99. And he's like, this is the one that I want because I want to be able to pay for X, Y, and Z, and I want to make sure I have enough money to put in my savings. So then he goes up to check out. Before he checked out, he asked the girl, this is all on his own, do you have a coupon that's out there by chance? And she's like, actually, we do. We have 20% off. He's like, is there any way I could get one? And I didn't tell him to do this. I was like, holy crap. Like, wow, that's awesome. Gets the coupon, gets 20% off. This is what really warmed my heart. The girl goes, hey, we're also raising money for the children's fund. Do you want to donate? You can donate $1. You can donate $2. If you donate $2, you get like this really cool little bracelet. And he's like, I would like to donate $2 because that's in my share. That's in my share budget. And I was just like, oh my gosh, this is. And when we left there, I was like, dude, you bought a costume that was less than what you would have gotten otherwise. You asked for a coupon and you gave something away. You gave something to, you know, something bigger than yourself. I mean, dude, it almost made me cry a little bit. So I was like, wow, look at the decisions he's making. you know, and otherwise I would have just, you know, swiped my debit card for things like that. And now we got in the car. He's like, man, I have enough money to still save. I have enough money to buy my lunch one day a week for the rest of the month. And I've got enough money left for a haircut. That's all I can pay for this month. So there's no new clothes for me. There's no new shoes. I kind of wanted a new ripstick, but I'm going to have to save for that. And I was just like, oh my God, the lights are going on. I'm loving this.
I love this story arc. I love how you brought it home. And I love the impact that this content that you've been cultivating and curating for the last several years, the impact it's had on your life and now how it's spilled over into your kids' life. That's truly remarkable. Larry, I have thoroughly enjoyed this conversation. And I'm sure there's people in the audience. We actually have a lot of your listeners in our audience, but I suspect that the vast majority of people are hearing about you and your podcast, The Dad Edge, for the first time. What is the best way for someone that wants to find out more to connect with you?
Yeah. So if you're interested in the podcast, I mean, we're on, gosh, all channels. I think we're on iTunes, Spotify, Podbean, Stitcher, iHeartRadio, all kinds of different, you just search Dad Edge Podcast. It likely it'll come up. My home base, even though the podcast is called Dad Edge, my home base is gooddadproject.com. I won't get rid of that only because that was what I started with in 2012. You can find all kinds of free resources on there as far as how to connect with your kids, how to connect with your wife. And then if you're interested in our communities, we have a big free group on Facebook called The Dad Edge, Real Dads with Purpose. We have thousands of men in that group. And then we've got our mastermind community, if you're interested in that, which is gooddadproject.com/alliance. That's our elite brotherhood. That's our live mastermind community where we're talking about those five dimensions that I mentioned at all times in a very structured yet flexible but effective community.
Yeah, I love the story with your son. I mean, it's amazing how many lessons were taught just in that one trip to the store. So yeah, really wonderful stuff. And more so, thanks for taking action. That just warms my heart every time I hear that. And yeah, it's really, really wonderful.
Oh, you bet, man. Thank you both. And thank you for what you do. As you guys know, this is such an intimate topic with men. And it's one of those things that affects everything. It affects our relationship. It affects our health. It affects our sleep. It infects even our intention. You know, if we're preoccupied with stress about money, it's very hard for us to show up in the moment. So thank you for all you guys do. And by the way, Choose FI audience. Let me just say this real quick. No, Brad is not paying me for this and neither is Jonathan, but I'm telling you guys right now, these two men put their heart and souls into this podcast, into this community, into this brand. And if you're here and you're listening, I mean, this is a phenomenal place to be for resources, for finances, for relationships. So again, thank you both for what you do.
Larry, thank you so much for coming on the show today.
Hey, you bet, man. It was an honor. It was a privilege. Brad, it was great having you on the Dad Edge podcast. Jonathan, I can't wait for you to come on. I think that'll be an epic show as well. So, but guys, I'm honored. Thanks for having me.
All right, guys. Well, unfortunately, that is going to bring this episode to a close. Now, as you know, we like to finish every episode by doing a drawing for a copy of a book that we have found useful. And there's three books that we offer. The first is J.L. Collins' book, The Simple Path to Wealth. The second is Dominic Cortuccio's book, Design Your Future. And the third book is from Vincent Puglisi's Freelance to Freedom. If you want to enter this drawing, all you need to do is just go to chooseify.com/iTunes, follow the instructions there, and leave us a written review on either iTunes or Stitcher. Then send us an email to feedback@chooseify.com, letting us know that you left a review and what screen name you left it under. We give away one book for every five written reviews that we get, and we announce the winner on the Friday roundup. Brad, how many winners do we have today?
All right, Jonathan, we have one winner today, and the winner is Marcy.
Marcy says, my friend and I just came on to Chooseify recently. I was all in from episode one, and now I'm binge listening as often as I can. In 3 weeks of listening, I've gotten up to 24R. I've met with my tax guy to strategize on how not to pay in this year. We determined by just maxing out my HSA account contributions through payroll deductions, we should break even and not pay in for the first time in years. Then we also talked about making Roth contributions or traditional IRA contributions. They told me to wait until we calculate the taxes for this year, and they will tell me exactly what I should contribute to which account. Then we spent another 30 minutes talking about all the other great things this podcast teaches you. Separation of service, conversion ladders, optimizing your FAFSA, capital gains harvesting. Their smiles also matched mine, as they don't have many people coming in to talk about these kinds of things. They said, you're totally right. There are a lot of things that we can do and reminded me to bring this up as the time grows near. I feel like I just got a raise. I've been walking a little bit lighter and smiling just a whole lot bigger, knowing that I'm taking control. Thanks, guys. The only bad thing about catching up with the current episode is I won't be able to binge anymore. I love it. Well, Marcy, I think you have about 170 episodes total. So I think you got a few months on that runway, but we appreciate you binge listening. That is amazing. All right, my friends, the fire is spreading. We'll see you next time as we continue to go down the road less traveled.
You've been listening to Choose FI Radio Podcast, where we help middle-class America build wealth one life hack at a time.